2, come to the last healing miracle of Christ that we're going to deal with in this series. But in Luke chapter 22, we'll read verses 49 through 51. When they which were about him saw what would follow, they said unto him, Lord, shall we smite with the sword? And one of them smote the servant of the high priest and cut off his right ear. And Jesus answered and said, suffer ye thus far, or permit this. And he touched his ear and healed him. Now all four gospel writers, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, record that one of Christ's disciples cut off the ear of this servant of the high priest. Notice in Matthew 26, verse 51, and behold, one of them which were with Jesus, be one of the 11, stretched out his hand and drew his sword and struck a servant of the high priest's and smote off his ear. In Mark chapter 14, verse 47, and one of them that stood by drew a sword and smote a servant of the high priest and cut off his ear. Luke 22 and verse 50, and one of them smote the servant of the high priest and cut off his right ear. Then notice in John 18, verse 10. John 18, verse 10. Now, up till this point, Matthew, Mark, and Luke tell us that one of them, one of the 11, drew a sword. I believe they all carried swords. There's a message there as well. Verse 10, then Simon Peter. So, John identifies the apostle that took this action. Then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it, and it shouldn't surprise us with Peter's personality that he was the one who did this, and smote the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. Now, only Luke, and Luke being a physician, but only Luke records the miracle. Only Luke says that Jesus touched his ear and healed him. Matthew, Mark, and John do not record the miracle. Only Luke. Also, Matthew, Mark, and Luke do not identify who it was that severed the ear of the servant, saying simply one of them. But John gives us that information, saying that it was Peter. Now, Matthew, Mark, and Luke do not identify the one who had his ear severed, only saying that he was a servant of the high priest. But John records, there in John 18 and 10 again, John records the servant's name was Malchus. So again, we see the importance of looking at all accounts, because some leave out information that the other gives. If we want a complete picture, especially in the Gospels, we need to look at as many accounts as there are. If there be four, we need to look at four. If there be two, we need to look at two. John would also mention this man later. Notice in John 18:26, he gives us his name in verse 10, that his name was Malchus. And then in verse 26, one of the servants of the high priest, being his kinsman, whose ear Peter cut off. So there he is. Saith, did not I see thee in the garden with him? He recognized Peter. I'm sure he wouldn't forget Peter's face as Peter wielded that sword. So only Luke records the miracle. Now, right now, we want to look at the events leading up to the miracle, and they are extremely important, and most of the time, greatly misrepresented, misunderstood, even to the point of blasphemy. But we see, following the Passover meal, John 14, 15, 16, following the Passover meal and the institution of the Lord's Supper, and we're not going to get into it, but the Lord, Judas had already gone out when Jesus instituted the Lord's Supper. He instituted the Lord's Supper with the 11, not the 12. And that's very important. But after the Passover meal, after the institution of the Lord's Supper with the 11, Jesus led the 11 out into the darkness, and he would lead them into the garden of Gethsemane. Notice in Matthew, again, Matthew 26, we'll read verse 30, and we'll read verse 36. And when they had sung a hymn, that is Jesus and the 11, they went out into the Mount of Olives. Verse 36, then cometh Jesus with them unto a place called Gethsemane, and said unto his disciples, the 11, sit ye here while I go and pray yonder. Notice in Mark 14, 32, so we see that Jesus and the 11, they sing a hymn after the Passover meal, after the institution of the Lord's Supper. They go out into the Mount of Olives, and they enter into the Garden of Gethsemane. In Mark chapter 14 and verse 32, and they came to a place which was named Gethsemane. In Luke chapter 22, verse 39. And he came out and went as he was wont, or as was his custom, to the Mount of Olives. And his disciples also followed him. So that's twice now, Matthew and Luke, that we have mention of the Mount of Olives. And then in John chapter 18, and verse 1. When Jesus had spoken these words, the words recorded in John 14, 15, and 16, he went forth with his disciples over the brook Kidron, where was a garden. And we've already been told the name of that garden is Gethsemane. Into the which he entered, and his disciples. So from these accounts, we learn that Gethsemane was a garden in the Mount of Olives. We also learn from Matthew's account that it was a place where Jesus often went to pray. We see that also in John 18, verse 2. And Judas also, which betrayed him, knew the place, for Jesus oftentimes resorted thither with his disciples. So Jesus had this place in the Mount of Olives in a garden called Gethsemane. And Jesus would often go there and pray, no doubt by himself, and as we're told here in John 18, he also went there many times with his disciples. So as Jesus and the 11 arrived at Gethsemane, they arrive at this garden. He says unto them, "Sit ye here while I go and pray yonder." He then took Peter, James, and John. He often took these three. Peter, James, and John, he took them further into the garden, leaving the other eight a little bit behind. Notice Matthew 26, verse 37. Matthew 26, verse 37. And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee. And as they're going further into the garden, Jesus began to be sorrowful and very heavy or heavily burdened. We see Mark, Luke also record this. So as he's going into the garden, I believe he begins to feel the weight of the sins of his people. I believe that's what it means when he says he began to be heavy. The burden, the weight of the sins of his people that God the Father had given to Christ before the foundation of the world. It says that he began to be very sorrowful. Many will say that Jesus was now beginning, in fact, most will say that Jesus was now beginning to dread the cross. Jesus never dreaded the cross. That is plain as the noonday sun throughout the scriptures. But something was happening. I believe also that Satan, in an attempt to prevent Christ from going to the cross, contrary to popular belief, Satan did not want Jesus Christ to go to the cross. Satan tried to kill Christ many times before the cross. This goes back to Herod. Well, it goes back into the Old Testament, killing the seed of Christ, preventing him from coming in the world. That was the first attempt, to prevent him from even coming in the world. He could not do that. So the next thing is to prevent him from going to the cross. This is why he used Herod. Many times the Pharisees and the enemies of God took up stones to kill him, but they could not, for his hour was not yet come. So Satan, I believe in Gethsemane, this is like a last-ditch effort. Satan is trying to prevent Christ from going to the cross. I believe that Satan is seeking to kill Jesus Christ in the Garden of Gethsemane. The result of all this is a great sorrow and heaviness. Notice in Mark chapter 14, verse 34, "And saith unto them, My soul is exceeding sorrowful unto death." I am so sorrowful, I am about to die. I believe this was a struggle of life and death for Jesus Christ, because Satan was working so hard. Again, as in all cases, we have the victory of Jesus Christ. Gethsemane. Things we cannot imagine happened in Gethsemane. But Christ was victorious in Gethsemane. So there he is. He's sorrowful even unto death. Remember, he took Peter, James, and John a little further into the garden than the others. He then instructed Peter, James, and John to tarry. He said, you stay right here. And Jesus went a little further into the garden. Notice in Matthew 26, verse 39. And he went a little further and fell on his face and prayed. In verse 38, even unto death, tarry ye here and watch with me. That is, you tarry here, I'm going to go a little further. But you watch with me, that is, you pray with me. He's already told them that he's sorrowful even unto death. Now you stay here and you pray. Notice in Mark chapter 14, verse 35. Mark 14, 35. And he went forward a little and fell on the ground and prayed that if it were possible, the hour, the present hour, might pass from him. In Luke chapter 22, verse 41, and he was withdrawn from them, that is, Peter, James, and John, about a stone's cast, and he kneeled down and prayed. Jesus is engulfed with sorrow, not because he was about to lay down his life on the cross, because of what was going on at that very hour. Jesus Christ was engulfed with sorrow, filled with affliction. Jesus Christ had torment and torture of soul. And he prayed three times, let this cup pass from me. Notice Matthew 26, verse 39. Matthew 26, verse 39 through verse 44. Every time I look at these scriptures, that what we're talking about today, I think of Brother Eugene Clark, because he's the one who took me to the side one time and showed me these things back in the late 70s. But notice in Matthew 26, verse 39. I'll get there in a minute. He went a little further, fell on his face and prayed, saying, O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. I do not believe that he is praying about the cross. He is not praying, Lord, if it's possible, let me not go to the cross. If that is someone's view, and it's the view of most commentators, then his prayer was unanswered. And I don't believe Christ ever prayed a prayer that was unanswered, because Christ always prayed in the will of the Father. And every prayer in the will of the Father is answered. So you have serious problems. I mean, you have serious theological problems. You are now questioning the very deity of Christ if you hold the view that he's praying about the cross. And someone has said in the past, not here, well, it's not that important. Oh, it's immensely important, because it gets into the person of Jesus Christ. So he prays, "Let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt." And he cometh, after he prayed that, he cometh unto the disciples, and what are they doing? They're sleeping. And saith unto Peter, "What, could ye not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray." Again, he instructed them that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit is indeed willing. He says, "I know your spirit is willing, but your flesh is weak." He went away again the second time and prayed, saying, "Oh, my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me except I drink it, thy will be done." And he came after the second time, and again, there they are asleep. And he left them and went away again and prayed the third time, saying the same words. Then cometh he to his disciples and saith unto them, "Sleep on now and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners." So three times he prayed, "Let this cup pass from me." So the real issue here is, what is the cup? What is the cup that he's praying? You remember Jesus told the disciples, he said, "I have a cup that I must drink that you are not able to drink." That's right here in the Garden of Gethsemane. This cup does not refer to the cross. It refers to what he was experiencing at that very hour. And when he came to the disciples the third time and said, "Sleep on, the hour is at hand," his prayer was answered. He had victory in Gethsemane. And now he's ready to go to the cross. Again, he's not looking to avoid the cross. He is praying that his life would be spared so that he could go to the cross. And then following this, Jesus went forth, and we'll begin here next week. Jesus went forth. He did not have to be hunted down. He did not have to be sought out. Jesus went forth to the very enemies of God to be arrested. And eventually, of course, led to the cross. Let's look to the Lord. Word of prayer. Heavenly Father, again, we thank you, Lord, for this day.